reasons why a board is needed of some kind, some independent board, is that there is some agency needed as a spokesman or person for the quality of services rendered to the indigent, because, as I and others have said before, the quality of the services rendered to the indigent may have a lot to do with the total costs which dealing with that person is going to have for society. Again, quality service which searches out a job or an alternative program for a particular individual may be an enormous saving as against a minimally mandated service which just pleads that person guilty, doesn't oppose incarceration, which may be the worst thing that can happen, both in terms of cost and in terms of rehabilitation overall. I don't want to belabor the point. I've made the point. I think, however, that's just, we can't prove that at this moment. And so we are constantly besieged with a request that the bids of those which are cheapest are those that ought to be accepted without consideration of the other factors, without consideration of whether or not there are people on the staffs of some of the providers who are able to provide services which may be more cost-effective for society as a whole than the mere meeting of constitutional mandates. And we hope that an evaluation of that kind can silence or at least mute some of the objections that we have to the provision of quality services, which I think the board exists to provide in addition to meeting the constitutional mandate minimum.
Anderson Bauman?
I agree with the goal of discovering which combination of services attorneys can provide to their clients which will best serve their clients' needs, which is really what you're talking about. And I think that the counterpart to that is to articulate that standard so that the expectation is clear. And once it is articulated and the expectation is clear, make your RFP or whatever it's called, and then there is an obligation to accept the lowest bid. Once all of the services are clearly defined and the expectation of the state is set forward, is that amenable to the process as you perceive it?
Certainly.
Okay, we have before us a motion which was made by Representative Springer. And Representative Springer, I would just ask one thing: if you would accept as a friendly amendment, in all those cases where it appears, the language that says "subject to the direction of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court," and that's in several places here. I think it's redundant language, but I'm also just concerned about sort of firewalling a little bit more. Do you have any problem with that?
That would be within my intent, okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Springer's motion would be to adopt the amendments to House Bill 2869, which is the -4 amendments, LC 875, with the exception of the elimination of the Indigent Defense Board in all those cases where it would be in there. So he would leave that intact, but would adopt the remainder of the provisions of the bill. Is that motion clear? Where do you want to...
Mr. Chairman, could I ask
this is
one
a conceptual
question?
Motion.
Pardon me?
It's a conceptual motion. Go ahead.
When the reference is made to keeping the board intact, does that also assume you keep the position of Indigent Defense Administrator intact?
Yes.
Thank you.
We thought we'd hobble him a little bit more, but
no. Well, I'm not sure that Mr. Lennon has enough to do, but
I don't know how intact the administrator can remain.
All right, so that's any further discussion on the motion?
Thanks a lot.
Not the clerk call the roll.
Bauman?
Aye.
Miller?
No.
Phillips?
No.
Springer?
Aye.
Burton?
I'm going to vote no. case the motion fails. That leaves the main motion before us. No, there is no main motion. Is there a motion on the dash for amendments?
Mr. Chair, I'd move the adoption of HB 2869 dash four amendments to HB 2869.
Representative Springer moves. I'm sorry, Representative Phillips moves to amend House Bill 2869 with the dash four amendments. This is LC 875. Do you wish to make those friendly amendments?
Yes.
Also, that would include the elimination of that language. Subject to the direction of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, that would be implied in that motion. Any discussion on the motion? Clerk, call roll.
Bellman?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
On your motion.
Yeah.
Aye.
Springer?
No.
Burton?
Aye. Okay. That and I'll sign them up. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I'm not in any hurry to ever have this heard again. So, okay, let's go to House.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. Yes. Representative Phillips.
First of all, I think all I did is move the adoption of the amendments.
Oh, I'm sorry. We need to have a motion to move that to the. To the full committee.
And second of all, I just want to make it absolutely clear in everybody's mind that that motion is not in any way a reflection of what I think the board members of the Indigent Defense Board did or tried to do or were unable to do because of a crisis that went beyond them. I think given a different opportunity, if we could lease that type of manpower or person power, we'd be in great shape. But we got a crisis. And for that reason, I think we've got to move on. And I've been the most critical person, I think, on this committee, the Chief Justice, and this, in fact, puts the hot rock in his pocket, and I want to see it solved. And I would think if he doesn't, we ought to, or whoever's here 2 years from now, ought to call him in and find out why not. And not Mr. Linden being called in, but the Chief Justice being called in. I realize there's some constitutional with us talking to him, but frankly, it's an issue that's too big. With that caveat all being made, and now I've made my speech, I'll move the amended version of 2869 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
That's correct. Representative Phillips moves House Bill 2869 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion on that? I would just like to say that I concur and would echo Representative Phillips' comments that my vote on this is, in fact, it was really tough for me to vote to abolish the board because I really feel that it has an important role that has to be played out and will be played out, I think, in at some point. Representative Springer?
Well, I hate to make predictions, but I'm concerned we're going to find ourselves in special session to deal with this problem as a result of litigation one way or the other. So I don't think that this action really solves the underlying problem of adequacy of funding. And in my opinion, abolishing the Indigent Defense Board because they haven't had the resources makes about as much sense as abolishing the Transportation Commission because we have roads and bridges in this state that aren't adequately funded. So I don't know where the logic has come from in ways and means to do away with the board as it's totally off target in terms of addressing the real problem.
Further comments? Not clerk, call roll.
Bellman?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
No.
Burton?
No. Motion carries. Now, we'll go to 3059. Schizophrenia there, folks. 3059.
Won't be my last. Good.
This one here we can trash, right? That's a Dave's 3 amendment.
Yeah.
After this is opposed, this I have moved. 3059. What are you guys here on?
3040.
Why don't we do 3040? Let's do 3040. Let's do 3040. Been far too patient to ignore. Okay, 3040. This is the. You want to explain this? We've had a hearing, though. But I have. Do you have? I received some amendments, proposed amendments. Wrong. Proceed. I didn't. Different bill. Yeah, stuck in the wrong file. You want to explain this to us and get us up to date?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3040 was submitted to expand the Crime Victims Compensation Program. And we had submitted one amendment to clarify the language on the subrogation issue on awards that were granted to victims.
Jerry, did you put your name on the record, by the way?
Excuse me. Jerry Christensen, Director of the Crime Victims Compensation Program, Department of Justice.
Sorry. We do have an amendment here in the office.
And I'm just available to answer any questions if there are any concerns about the fiscal impact.
What is the fiscal impact?
It was submitted. We estimate for the coming biennium $382,000.
So this does have a subsequent ways and means? No, because it's more directly revenue.
We anticipate that the majority, if not all, of the fiscal impact would be covered by federal funds that we're currently receiving. It's the Victims of Crime Act funds. It's a national program where there's an offender tax on all federal crimes, and states are eligible to receive funds on an annual basis based on 35% of their prior year payout of state funds. This past year we received $261,000, and we have just applied for our second year funding, which would be $285,000.
The 87 amount or the 88?
Right, correct.
So, but those are budgeted. So this would, what I'm trying to figure out is on a referral to Ways and Means whether this would have to go away, even if the funds are not state funds, it still has to be figured into the budget, doesn't it? Have to go to Ways and Means?
I'm sorry.
I'm trying to get a sense of whether this would still have to go to Ways and Means. If there is federal funding coming in for this, or whether this is something that has to still be part of the budget, I believe.
Ways and Means authority would be necessary to expend or to set an expenditure limitation upon any
on
federal funds.
So do you know if that expenditure limitation exists within the budget? Apparently not.
We have expenditure authority for the first year of our federal funds, if that's what you're asking.
Okay.
So Mr. Chair, if you wanted to pass it out with a motion to send it to Ways and Means, or if it's going to Ways and Means already,
we could
explore that before the bill gets to full committee to determine whether or not the Department of Justice budget does have an expenditure limitation, which is going to allow them, in fact, to expend the funds for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's anyone who can speak to that issue at this time.
All right, first we have the amendment before us. We haven't adopted that, I don't believe, in sub. So would you just explain very quickly what that amendment, the intent of the amendment is?
My name's Ann Kelly. I'm an assistant attorney general. This amendment is designed so that the Department of Justice only has power over those settlements that would be entered into by someone who had already received an award from the department.
Oh, okay. We're looking over here at on Section 8 of the bill, sub 3. That's what changes that section. That was the question
yes.
we had. Okay. Is your question on that, Representative Swearin?
For Ms. Christensen or Ms. Kelly, can you give me any ballpark sense of how many times the state through the Department of Justice has maintained an action under 147.345? Try to recover funds? Dozen a year? One a year? None? Anybody know?
Are you asking where we would initiate an action?
Yeah, apparently you take, it's a subrogation or an assignment of the claim, basically. Do you know if the Department of Justice has ever initiated such a claim against the assailant or the responsible party?
To our knowledge, the Department of Justice has never initiated such a claim. The department has received repayment from the assailant in the forms of restitution. That's not at all uncommon. What is more common is if the victim goes against a third party, perhaps the tavern where the fight broke out, and gets a settlement from the tavern as they're being fairly responsible. And at that point, the department might step in and ask for a cut of that because it's actually a double payment. We think perhaps once on that issue, maybe one a month.
Thank you.
I want to read through this amendment so I understand what it says. If I can do it, let me see if I read it right. If we adopted your amendment, it would that section sub 3 of section 8 would read: any settlement by right or right of action by the victim or dependent of the victim based on a compensable crime. It doesn't delete the language there, then, right?
Excuse me?
I'm trying to follow the form of your amendment. Can you read that to me, the section sub 3, as it would read if amended?
Any settlement of a right or right of action by the victim or the dependent of the victim based on the compensable crime against the assailant or any other person or legal entity must be approved by the Department of Justice if the department has made an award to the victim or the dependent of the victim.
Okay, because you've got a period after the word crime. Not to be too picky.
The period is an error.
So that would be, okay, we'd have to send this down to LC anyway. You get it. Okay, any discussion on that, versus where?
In terms of the new language on lines 34 and 35, I think I understand that you folks feel like you have to have some kind of enforcement or sanction available to ensure compliance, but is there a somewhat less onerous sanction, like holding the party personally liable for the amount? I don't know if that's less onerous or not. In terms of having the settlement declared void, it seems pretty serious to me, and I'm just thinking out loud at this point, but it could be that the parties may agree to a settlement before the statute of limitations is run, possible, or a case has even been filed, and you folks might come along and say, hey, wait a minute, this is void because you didn't have our approval, the statute may have run, and you have to think of the worst case scenario here. What would happen in those circumstances?
Where the Department of Justice wouldn't hear about the settlement until after the statute had run?
Yeah.
In that case...
How about discretionary? May subject the individual who received the... to obligation to repay, or may render the settlement void. When you have a flat out will render it void, I get a little concerned about whether or not we're creating a trap out there
and it's going to sneak up and bite somebody pretty badly.
I believe this language is that taken from ORS Chapter 656, referring to third-party settlements in the workers' compensation area.
I'm not wild about that either. That's...
You had to bring that up, didn't you?
Well, I just raised the question. I'm not going to take much more time today.
I don't believe the department would have any objection to changing the will to May and making it discretionary.
Okay. We have a proposed amendment, and we have a question about the fiscal impact or the expenditure limitation. What I would do is a chair entertain a motion to, since this is not an LC draft form, but to do two things. One is to approve the amendments, at least conceptually, with the concept of the May being added into there, and we'll have that done by LC draft. And then to get a fiscal analysis done on the question of expenditure limitation before it goes to the full committee, and if there is a problem, the condition of the motion would be that it would have a subsequent to Ways and Means, and if that isn't necessary, then we would just simply put it to the full committee. Is that a reasonable motion? I would so entertain. Representative Springer moves.
I would so move, and I'd like to conceptually ask that as part of that motion, as far as that language on 34 and 35, I speak of the failure to have this settlement approved by the department will render it void. I may have an opportunity with Ms. Kelly to work out something which will allow the department, if they've not been notified, to have the right to recover against that party the amount that was paid, or to render it void. I would feel...
I think that was in my my intent there. I think they mentioned that the department wouldn't have a problem with making that a May, but if the language can be worked out so that it is different either than that, then that would be part of that conceptual. I want to get this moving along. So if that's acceptable, then that would be the motion. Okay, is that that's the motion then would be to amend House Bill 3040 with the proposed amendments made by the Department of Justice conceptually with the language on lines 34 and 35 of page 2 to be worked out between the department and the committee to reflect the interest here. Is there any objection to that? Those motions, if not, that's so ordered. Given that, then the chair entertain a motion to move House Bill 3040 as conceptually amended with the caveat that we'll check on the fiscal situation before then to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
Okay, Representative Bauman so moves. Is there any discussion on that? Not, clerk call roll.
Bauman.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Phillips.
Aye.
Springer.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, 3377. Let's see if we can get that out of here. Is
this your? Is this your bill?
What
was this bill, Mays? Or 33 is this
Representative
Penn? Yeah.
Yeah. That was
Budget Analyst Penn. Would you? Would you like to come up with this one? I think we had a hearing on it. I don't know if there were any amendments.
How about Indigent Defense Administrator Penn?
I think the reason that we saw this bill actually was a different bill at one time in its life,
yeah.
And now is this bill. Because
yeah. Something
of
about relating clauses.
Relating clauses. So we got that straightened out. And we had a hearing on it, so this is a work session.
And I raised the question as to why they ever had to have a gun.
Why they ever had to have a gun at all.
That's right. Why even open it up? And if we open it up, why should they petition and get a certificate from the sentencing court? Why don't we handle it like you could do with... concealed weapon permits would go to the sheriff, or just get an authorization from the DA, which would be Sounds like a good
right away.
Dale Kent, District Attorney Association. The provision about allowing a lawful rifle or shotgun for hunting purposes was a provision because we thought that there might be a lot of thought by individuals that was too oppressive, and that since we do a lot of hunting in the state of Oregon, that people should at least be allowed to have a lawful gun to do that. And in the past, this statute did not prevent ex-felons from having rifles and shotguns. I have no problem with totally outlawing rifles and shotguns from ex-convicts and removing that from the measure. I have no problem with changing the procedure and having the sheriff or the district attorney for the county where the conviction was obtained in issuing the certificate. The reason I thought there should be a certificate is because forecasting ahead, what will happen is every time an arrest is made and you have an ex-felon, you're going to say, oh yeah, well I just used that semi-automatic that happens to be fixed for automatic fire for geese hunting or something like that. And we wanted to have a piece of paper that would say, this gun with this serial number you're authorized to have. Otherwise, it'll be a very difficult problem.
Does that answer your...
Well, I understand where he's coming from. I guess I can put on my ultra-conservative hat and say these suckers broke the law. They gave up their privileges. We should never let them have a gun ever again, except some felonies don't mandate that kind of, to quote you, draconian approach to it. However, I do think that since he seems amenable to allowing the district attorney to offer that it'd be better than the court. Because what happens if a guy was sentenced 14 years ago in a court in Washington County and now lives in Klamath Falls? That doesn't seem reasonable. Or other way around. Or he moved in from out of state and he was a convicted felon in Tennessee and now lives in Washington County and could go out to our DA and say, look, I've hunted all my life. All I want to do is go duck hunting on one of your ponds. Give me your certificate to have that gun. Seems to be administratively a better way to do it than have to go back to the sentencing court, which may not be in Oregon unless I am wrong.
Perhaps a good amendment would be one that would talk about if the district attorney would give that authorization. The county where the offense or the conviction was obtained or the county of residence at the present time, and that would get away from the idea of the out-of-state conviction. It's just designed so that there isn't just an open defense to this statute.
Mr. Penn, wouldn't this amendment as currently is now allow someone, say, who's been convicted of driving under one of the other C felonies, to at the same time of sentence petition the court to allow him to possess a hunting rifle?
As the bill is before you?
Yes.
Yes.
And could we still allow that in the amendments that you've been talking about?
I'd have no problem with that, okay. To allow the sentencing judge to give that permission, as well as the district attorney to give us a certificate.
Isn't there a timeline on this 15 years? Isn't there what?
Yes, there is. There's a provision in the bill itself which applies to felonies for 15 years.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I guess I don't have any problem with the bill as long as we do a little bit of adjusting. If the sentencing judge wants to give that authority, that's fine, but we also need a way to handle these guys from out of state or who moved around.
We understand the existing law prohibits a felon from carrying a weapon which is capable of being concealed or any machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the primary purpose of your bill was to eliminate that?
Yeah.
So I mean, you say no, not at all, but we'll make an exception for hunting rifles.
Yeah.
You said your ultra-conservative hat, I put on my ultra-liberal hat, I suppose, on the other hand, and say,
You know, do I really want anybody running around, giving any authority to anybody to have weapons any more than we need to already let them have guns as it is? I mean, I mean, my ultra-conservative hat, too. I feel the same way you did. Heck with this. Maybe we should just adopt the bill and eliminate subsection 5 of section 1.
I'm not recalling what subsection 1 is.
But, well, section 1 is actually the bill. Sub 5 is the part that allows the hunting rifle. And I'm thinking, why don't we just eliminate, just take that out, and then we don't have felons having any weapons at all. What we've essentially done is simply eliminated the ability of them to have any weapons at all.
Well, except when I remember when I said that, I'm not sure one guy that gets picked up for drunk driving a felony.
No.
How about driving while suspended? Which one is it?
It can be.
It can be.
UUMV.
Yeah.
Joyriding.
Yeah. You know, it does something like that. It may not be indicative of, obviously, of a pattern or something. Yeah. Maybe indicative that you shouldn't have the guy out hunting with the rest of us anyway, but. You know, just to say all felonies, I don't mind leaving a hole, but it's got to be a very narrow little gap that these suckers can slip through.
Mr. Chair.